Okay, this Saturday night, we are facing the San Jose Earthquakes, usually guaranteed to be one of the spiciest matches of our season. On Tuesday, the Moon Tower Boys talked with Mark Followill for a preview from an Apple TV announcer perspective, but sometimes the national media view of a team is more general than what we could learn from an inside perspective. So we reached out to the Quakes play-by-play announcer and host of the Soccer Hour podcast, Ted Ramey. Ted, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. Very excited to talk with y'all. Appreciate it.
Pre-show, we talked a lot about Taylor Swift. We talked a lot about stuff that we're both into. I think this is going to be really fun, but I do want to just get into it here for our listeners. So to go off the kind of general premise of the show, right? National MLS coverage definitely reduces complexities to generalities sometimes. And so we want to know, how does the national take on San Jose compare to local perspectives, right? In the season preview, MLS Soccer was talking about how your goalkeeper needed to kind of stay top of the league for Quake success, right? And that it seems like there might be a little bit of hesitance or like slow adoption of Lucci's structures. In general, that feels pretty accurate. What about specifically around the team? What is kind of the take right now on San Jose?
I think right now it's a situation where the team has had some very tough results. Like, they were in Dallas in the opener and it was tied 1-1, like in the waning moments, at the death, as they like to say, and Dallas found the go-ahead goal, and that was like a bit of a gut punch. And then in the second game, it was the LA Galaxy who came in, you know, with a head full of steam, and they had looked good in their previous outings, and they took it to San Jose. And I think those first two games were kind of a, you know, what's the classic, the Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the jaw or punched in the face or something. And like, I think that kind of wobbled things a little bit. And the Earthquakes lost the following week to Vancouver and then went into Kansas City, took a 1-0 lead, and then again was able to not hold on and surrendered a 2-1 loss, came back against Seattle, got a 3-2 win, which probably is not indicative of how much the Earthquakes dominated that game. Seattle was awarded a soft penalty, in my opinion, letter of the law, but not always going to be called. So that made it probably a closer game than it should have been. And then last week against Houston, the Earthquakes jump out to a 1-0 lead 58 seconds in, and then they got a red card in the 35th minute, I believe, and then another one that came in stoppage time after they'd surrendered a couple goals and they lost again. So, like, there was a lot of predictions about the Earthquakes this year of them not being great and being not in a playoff position like they were a year ago. And unfortunately, those predictions have been correct. But I always say, like, it looks worse from the outside or from a distance than when you are up close, because I think when you're up close, you see that this team has been there. Like, they've taken the lead first in 4 out of the 6 games, which, you know, if you score first in Major League Soccer, that's usually going to put you in a good position. And they have taken leads on the road, in particular in all 3 of their road matches, at Houston, at Sporting Kansas City, and at Dallas up to this point. So that in and of itself, that's a good sign. It's the inability to hold on to those leads, which kind of goes down to the overall inability to score, which has been a problem going back to really the post Leagues Cup timeline of a year ago. The Earthquakes, just their offense hasn't been humming. There's been a talk a lot in the offseason about the need for a center attacking midfielder, a DP center attacking mid, which is that central playmaker who's really going to advance things offensively when they get into the attacking third. Jamiro Montero was in that role for the last 2 years, but he wasn't really a natural offensive playmaker that way. He would win the ball back in the middle of the field and he had a great work rate, but he wasn't contributing enough offensively. And they looked for that player in the offseason and they weren't able to get it done for whatever reasons there may be. That's, you know, those things are above my pay grade, I like to say. But they do have an 18-year-old in Nico Chikiris, who was phenomenal against Seattle 2 games ago and really showed a lot of the hype of why he's been with the U.S. U-20s, was in the World Cup for the U-20s last year. Really just has a high level of talent about him. And he was in also in Houston, and then he got subbed out after the red card because they needed more defensive replacements. So, you know, it's a long way of saying, like, yeah, the Earthquakes, from the national perspective, have lived up to their expectations. but they've been a lot closer than I think maybe the 3 points after six games would really indicate. And I think there is the sense that if they can get over the hump and get the ball rolling, they can rectify things pretty quickly. But as we know in Major League Soccer, if you get off to a slow start, it's hard to come back from. But it is a long season. You know, there's 34 games, and it usually comes down to decision day for a lot of teams to see where they're going to end up. And I think the Earthquakes are trying to have the viewpoint of they're still trying to change their roster, get things going offensively in particular, and then see what they can do from that point. Because I think, you know, last week it's a perfect example, up 1-0 on the road, and they're coming off a win already and things are going great until they get a red card and go a man down. If you go a man down, even with a 1-0 lead on the road, it's probably not going to end well. So
especially right now, in Houston.
Yeah.
But even so, they held on a long time.
They did. It was like watching from my perspective, it was like, because I work in hockey as well, I was like, this has like been a 65-minute penalty kill where it's just clear the zone. And we can talk tactics of what they should have done, but I think that's, you know, when you're a man down, it takes a toll. And I think just trying to get it out of the zone was the best strategy, and tough to hold on, like you said, in Houston. Thankfully, it was, you know, late March as opposed to August, when it's when it's just wet outside, for lack of a better term.
You play in a swamp.
Like, I've earned the nickname Sweaty Teddy over my life, but like in Houston, I was like, this is my time. So.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, you kind of led a little bit into our next question, which is looking at their current form. It's not super exciting. 4 losses and a win in the last 5 matches. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, that doesn't really tell the whole story. What have you seen in previous seasons about the Quakes' ability to come back from a couple tough losses? You know, obviously you were hoping to carry the momentum of the win forward, which it felt like you were doing in Houston. But from there, how do they come back from this emotionally, mentally as a team?
I think they have the guys who can do it. I think they all have a lot of very strong willed people in the locker room. I think William Yarbrough, who's filling in for the injured keeper Daniel, who is a great MLS keeper in his own right and a former United States men's national team player. Like, if you have a chance to check out the media availability that he did yesterday, just such a very strong presence, very calm, very much understanding of what it takes to get it done. But you have guys like him and Christian Espinosa, who's our right winger, who is as dangerous a winger as there is in Major League Soccer. 13 goals, 13 assists a year ago. He's the Quakes' all-time assist leader now, and he only joined the team back in 2019. So he's just been a consistent performer. You know, him, even though Jackson Yule won't be on the pitch in this game because he saw a second yellow, which led to a red in stoppage time, I think during training this week, he'll be there to provide a lot of the mentality going in. And then there's just a lot of experienced players out there on the pitch. So I think that, you know, it's a team that's facing troubles right now, but I think they have the ability to work their way through it. And there are a lot of guys who were on the team back in 2020 during the pandemic shortened season. They had a terrible stretch where I believe in 3 consecutive games, they lost 7-1 to Seattle, 6-0 to Portland, and 5-0 to Colorado. And they ended up coming back from that and making their way into the playoffs. They qualified, you know, before the end of the season, and they beat LAFC at home. And, you know, it was something they were able to come back from. So I think understanding how to manage these emotions is part of their DNA. Like, they've been through tough stretches before. And even last year, when they weren't getting wins toward the end of the year, they weren't losing either. Like, they were still able to earn those critical points down the stretch to get into the playoffs. So I think that there might be, you know, they always say like, oh, what's it like facing a desperate team? Well, like, desperate means maybe you don't have anything to lose. That's not where the Earthquakes are. And I also don't think there's any panic. I think it's very much a team that understands that they're getting backed up against the wall a little bit. So they're going to understand that they need to respond. And that to me is a dangerous place for any team that you're facing, because you know that they are going to be going, you know, they'll be redlining for a lot of the game. And if they can get that momentum via the redlining to go their way, sometimes that can be a lot to go against. But, you know, I think Austin probably is coming in being aware of like, okay, let them overextend themselves, absorb it, and then see if we can, you know, go on a quick counter, things like that. So it'll be interesting in terms of a chess match. But I do think the Earthquakes definitely feel that the pressure is on. But, you know, to borrow from the tried and true phrasing, it's like pressure creates diamonds. And it's like at those moments, you see what comes out of a team.
Yeah. I think something that jumped out in my watching of the Houston match was that like ability to absorb pressure. Somehow it seemed like the back line was a little shaky, maybe, as far as like their communication with each other. Is that something that plays out through the rest of the results so far this season?
Yes and no. I think they've had, like, in surrendering goals, that first one, if you watch, it was just kind of a caromed ball. And I think that they had been doing a good job up to that point. But there have been issues with the defense this year. If you look at the Quakes' record, even though that game against Seattle, I said there was a soft penalty, they've given up two goals at least in every single match. And so right now that is a concern. Obviously, the back line is one of the last lines of defense before it gets to the goalie. So, you know, they tend to take more of the brunt. But the Quakes have had trouble specifically in transition D. When you're a man down, when they were like they were against Houston, I think some of those issues that they maybe have had overall defensively in the first, you know, six games maybe become a little bit more problematic. But I feel like for the most part, the Earthquakes backline has done a pretty good job at integrating two new players in Bruno Wilson and Vitor Costa. Vitor Costa is the new left back and Bruno Wilson is the new center back. So I think that there has been a learning curve that's been going on. But I think that whatever issues there have been that you're seeing in that game against Houston, I think it was more exacerbated by what we saw because they were a man down. They did bring on Tanner Beeson, which gave them a little bit of a different look in the back line.
Interesting tweak, by the way, like seeing Tanner play out on the wing or playing out on the like that left back position.
Yeah. He's done that occasionally. Like he also did that when he played for the Burlingame Dragons out here when he was also at Stanford at the same time when he was coached by Joe Cannon. And like he has a little bit of that left back experience. So it's definitely in his arsenal. But yeah, it was a it was just a different look, I think, for lack of a better term. And you have to figure out how you're going to deal with that, which becomes that much more difficult when you are down a man.
For sure. One of the things that the national pundit tree is kind of going around is like Lucci's system and deciding the structure of the team and like how the team builds in possession. Something that I think Steph and I noticed in the Houston match, the first 35 minutes anyway, right? Were that what we think of as traditional physical play from San Jose. We think of San Jose as being a very physically tough team, whether that's true all the time or only when they're playing Austin, you know, I'm not sure. But there's definitely bite to them when they come here or when we go there. And then they seem to be attempting to play more direct against Houston. Is that like a standard play style for them? Or was that a way to cut out that super strong Houston midfield?
I think that if they're capable of doing both. And I think Lucci's still trying to figure out what they are this year, because I think you can always get into trouble saying, oh, because this worked a year ago, we can do it the same way now. But it's like, yeah, there's changes along the back line, there's changes in the midfield, and you try to figure it out in the process. I think the Earthquakes are capable of playing out of the back and playing, you know, more direct and maybe going a little bit more route one. But right now, I think it has been a little bit different from game to game for the San Jose Earthquakes. We've seen different starting lineups. I mean, last year, I think Jeremy Obobese started every game, at the tip of the spear as the number nine. And this year that hasn't been the case. We've already seen Preston Judd slide in there as the starter. And we've seen, you know, different starters on the wings, where last year it was usually Cade Cowell, unless it was, him being away with the national team or the youth national team. You know, and this year we've seen Benji Gikanovic and Amal Pellegrino out on the left wing. And Pellegrino is still a question mark. He's the, European that comes over as a, top striker, golden boot winner over there. But he's been injured for the last couple of games. So that's, had questions as well. So there's been more change up this year, injury or otherwise, just to try and figure it out. So I think the one thing we can point to with Lucci and his structure is a quote he had after the LA game, where he said that he maybe gave them too much to think about going into the game. And it may have been a reason why they did not perform as well as he would have hoped. And so I think right now he's not necessarily trying to simplify things, but he's trying to whittle down to what the team does best. And I think that sometimes it can take, you know, up to 10 games. It can take a little bit longer. Last year, I think there was a better idea of what they were going into the season. Whereas this year, because some of the acquisitions came in late, Vitor Costa, the left back I mentioned, Bruno Wilson, the center back, Amal Pellegrino, they came in later. So I think the integration has led to maybe some more questions for Lucci to figure out.
Yeah. So I guess from your perspective, you've mentioned a lot of key players, some of whom are in, some of whom are going to be out this week. Who are the most valuable players to put up against Austin this weekend?
I mean, if you're going to look at who you need to stop, I would say first and foremost, it is Christian Espinosa, the right winger for the Earthquakes, because he's dynamite when he's in so form. He's so fun to watch because when he came in 2019, it was like we saw him in training and we're like, okay, when is this going to work its way out? And then we went to New York to face the Red Bulls in the third game of the season. And the first half was just like dominated by Espinosa, and the Quakes didn't lose that game. They actually lost their first four that year in what was year one of Matias Almeida. But out of that game was like, oh, that's the Christian Espinosa that we saw in training. Like, he's figuring it out. And since that point, he's been dynamite. So he's key number one. Jeremy Abobase has a history of scoring goals against Austin. He's got, mm-hmm. I think, one with Portland and then three with San Jose. So he's one to watch.
Yeah, it's funny. We were listening to, you had Lincoln Rose on your show this week, and he was saying we might as well try to get them to take Preston Judd's red card away so that he's starting instead of Abobase. And I just thought that was such like a good call out, but
yeah, my note here is just Jeremy Abobase kills Austin.
Yeah.
It's weird. Some guys like have those teams that they just go off against, and it can be like, with Abobase, it's with a different team. It's not like it's the same situation. Yeah,
it doesn't matter who.
Tim.
Yeah. And he gets it done. So those two offensively, and then Will Yarborough, the Quakes keeper right now, who was signed in the offseason because who had been the backup, JT Marcinkowski, blew out his knee at the end of last year in a friendly. And so Daniel was already the starter and then started this year as quote unquote the starter. And then he hurt his hamstring in training. He's out 4 to 6 months, needed surgery. So Will Yarborough was signed in the offseason. He stepped in. He's actually been really good. He was named, it's funny, you give up two goals on the road against Houston and he was named to MLS Team of the Match Day. Like, that tells you how good he was. He stood on his head. He was magnificent. So that would be, you know, one to watch in terms of highlights. So, you know, those three, and then another one to watch, I think, is Nico Chikiris, the 18-year-old homegrown attacking midfielder. His heads-up play, first touch away from pressure, just ability to find and lead guys in the attacking third. He's really exciting to watch. And for an 18-year-old, his composure and his vision is way ahead of the curve. Like, he's not a blow you away with speed and power type guy, but his mentals out there on the pitch, it's like he's a 25-year-old with 10 years of experience. And this is, you know, year three for him. And only did he become a consistent player at the end of last year. So those four are the ones that I would pay the most attention to.
Yeah, you got to be pretty good to push Owen Wolf to the wing from the center of the park for that youth national team.
Yeah.
And so, Nico is a special kid you got. I will say I've always got a soft spot in my heart for JT Marcinkowski because in the Austin FC home opener, the first ever match at Q2 Stadium, after the match, JT turned around and clapped the supporter section because of how like just intense they were for that whole 90 minutes. And so anyone from an opposing team who can appreciate what those psychos are doing in the South End there, always is going to earn a special place in my heart. So hope he recovers soon.
Yeah. He's such a nice dude. Like, that's the thing is like you root for everybody. Like, I've been working for the Earthquakes. This is my 11th season. And like, you root for everyone. You want everybody to succeed. But I think there was something specifically about when JT went down with that injury where everybody really felt it. And it was like, oh, like that was, now I won't say like devastating because, you know, injuries are a part of sports, but there was a different kind of emotional aspect for everybody on the team. And I think in the front office and all of us, you know, that work with the team, just because he is such a good dude.
Which says a lot if he's the backup and that's the reaction, right?
Yeah.
So we've gone through kind of the players that are going to be key to San Jose. What generally do you see as the Quakes' path to success against Austin, right? You know, we over here have been desperately hungry for that first dub that we got last week. And so the vibes have been a little bit hesitant in the fan base. And so seeing us start to turn this corner here, we're looking at an injury depleted and red card depleted San Jose team and thinking, could this be the start of something? What do you think San Jose needs to come in and do to stop that from to stop our joy?
Yeah. you know, I think that ultimately, if the Earthquakes offense is working, then you will see Christian Espinosa getting in behind, playing balls across, working the cutback. If Austin's having trouble with Christian Espinosa, then that would definitely lead me to believe that the Earthquakes are going to pull away with a draw or a win potentially. They haven't won yet on the road. They've only got one win on the year. And I want to get back to the storyline of Austin's quote-unquote struggles. But I think if you see things working very well for the Earthquakes with Christian Espinosa getting up on the wing and whoever it's going to be for the Earthquakes on the left wing, when Luchi Gonzalez spoke to the media yesterday, he said that Amal Pellegrino, the left winger, was still, they were uncertain of his status. He might be on the bench. He's training, but we don't know if he's going to be available. I would say if the Earthquakes are working well on the wings, if the ball is making its way from the central midfield out to the wings, that will be indicative of the Earthquakes having success. If they get kind of bogged down trying to work too much over the top, I think that's not a good sign. It depends on, like, I've seen it a couple times with teams against Lucci's tactics where they will kind of sit in a mid block and dare the Quakes to go over the top. Because the Quakes have the speed to do it, but you've got to be perfect in that pass where you're spraying from the midfield or going long from the keeper. Otherwise, you're just giving it right back. You've just sprinted down the field. Now you've got to come back and defend. So if the Earthquakes are working one way or another, especially from, you know, a nice build up to get the ball on the wings, that to me is what you want to see specifically, is they have the keeper who can stand on his head and do, you know, perform at a very high level. But I think if you're seeing attacks consistently come from the wings, that's going to be bad news for Austin. And it's crazy because, like, this Austin rivalry, you know, I think it's three straight draws off the top of my head, and the last one was a big Earthquakes win. Austin's never beat San Jose, so they're due. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's, again, and to get back to that storyline where people, I keep on hearing people say, Austin's not good, Austin's not good. And I'm like, I don't buy that, because they have a win now. And before that, they had three draws already. Against, so it's like
crazy good teams too.
Yeah. I always say, like, if a team's getting decisions early on and maybe they're not performing at their highest level, that means that there's a lot of fight there. And so, you know, don't be surprised when the narrative changes. And, like, the thing about Major League Soccer is, like, we look at the table and we're like, oh, like, San Jose is, you know, in 13th right now. Seattle, they're at the bottom. And it's like, no, like,
that doesn't
three
matter.
Games yeah. And things can change wildly, just yeah. absolutely wildly. Like, it's such a thing in flux, yet we treat every match day finish like, well, that's the end of the year. This team lost. So clearly, you know, everyone's fired and everything's over and done with. It's like, no, that's not how this works. So for Austin to have those points and get their win, it's like, I don't know, like, they're, like, they may have had some tough decisions. And like I said, from San Jose's perspective, it's worse far away than when you're up close. So when you see the up close things, you're like, I don't know, there might be something here to build on. And obviously my prep into Austin is, you know, just, you look at it and you start seeing it, like, because from before it was like, I kept on hearing that. But then when you look at the results and you're thinking to yourself, actually, I don't like everything that I see here. Like, I think there are problems being presented that people aren't giving them credit for. And let's see what happens to the table in, you know, May and June and July and August, because that's, you know, the start does not define a whole lot. And I would point no further than Kansas City last year, who just decided, yeah, the first third of the season, whatever. And they won their first game in May and they made a deep run into the playoffs, because they were like, I'm always on social media and Reddit, and people were like, Peter Vermes has got to go. Like, yeah, I don't know, guys. Like,
yeah, that's a
guy is a legend. Like, he'll figure it out. And lo and behold, he figured it out.
Yeah, he's pretty good. If we had a history of, you know, 15 out of 16 playoff appearances, I would be pumping the brakes on that conversation, right? Like, but I think on our end, right, the off-season narrative around Austin, coming into the season with, you know, 18 roster spots filled out of 30 or whatever, before, you know, like we've got currently 7 open roster spots on the team. Yeah. And so we haven't been able to fill a full bench even for some of our matches. And I think that frustration is starting to kind of affect the fan base expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, the fact that we got our first win of the season just recently, right? And had seen wins, what games that felt like a win until the last second where we got punched into a draw, right? Emotionally, that may as well be a loss for the fan base.
Right.
Obviously, the players and like statistically and in the standings, that's a point. It doesn't matter. But I think that's what drives a lot of that emotional reaction, right? Is like, it could have been 3 points and instead it's 1. And so.
Yeah. I mean, listen, fans want to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I always, you know, it's funny to hear, like, you know, like I was just saying about the fan base in Sporting Kansas City. It's like, they were upset. Well, like, is that valid? Like, sure. They were losing. If you don't go into May without a league win, you know, I understand why people are upset, but it's why I always go back to the, it's a long year. Like, it is a long season. Things change. I mean, we go back to, I don't want to say the previous generation, because that could get us into the longer, you know, like MLS 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. But like, if you go back to 2015 and 2016, when Portland and Seattle won their MLS Cups, like they both made big charges up the table late in the year. And I feel like only in recent memory are we talking more about the front runners, like where you had LAFC at the top of the table for the entirety of the season recently when they won in 2022. And, you know, you just kind of get into these different narratives. And even last year, you know, FC Cincinnati, they didn't win at all. You know, it was another team from the Midwest that got it done. But everybody was talking about, you know, FC Cincinnati's, you know, incredible season. Before that, it was New England's incredible season. And it's like, you know, the placing on the table doesn't indicate where things are going to be when all is said and done. And just there is a lack of patience. Like, that's what I always come down to. It's like, when you don't win, like, yeah, you wonder where it's going to come from. But it does. Like, teams change. They make acquisitions. The whole dynamic of a team can change with one game. And I know that that's probably what Austin's hoping for after the win last weekend, which is not what San Jose fans are hoping for. But San Jose is hoping that, you know, the win followed by the, maybe, I won't say self-destructive, but like, own worst enemy and getting a red card. Like, they're probably saying, okay, is this the turning point where they say, we can't make these mistakes anymore and we have to turn our season around? So it's you know, from those viewpoints, it does lend a very interesting dynamic as to what we're going to see on the pitch on Saturday.
Yeah. I'm desperate to know from your perspective. Mike brought it up a little bit earlier, but from our perspective, San Jose, they're always our spiciest match of the season. Is this something, it feels to us in Austin like this naturally evolving rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Is San Jose just like a physical team that's gonna, you know, be super chippy with every team? Or is that something that, like, specifically with Austin, y'all feel as well?
I think they do get chippy with everybody. Like, San Jose,
we're not special.
Well, no, but San Jose, I will put it this way. They, in my time, even when I was watching them before I worked for the team, they don't want to make it easy for anyone to play against them. There's a blue collar mentality. It's going to hurt when you're done playing San Jose. But yeah, that chippiness against Austin, and I've talked about this with Lincoln Rose in years past, there is something there because it feels like a rivalry that needs a playoff matchup to really take off, because it does feel like when these two teams go against each other, and we're talking about a lot of draws as of late, and just all, you know, ever since the two teams started playing each other, it has felt like there is the start of that rivalry that needs the spark to really set it off. Which I, you know, I would love to see these teams play in a 3-game playoff series, which I think would be, you know, very, very fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it does feel a little bit more so against Austin. Like, actually, Austin and Sporting Kansas City are the two where it feels like there is a lot of that chippiness. And San Jose does have the playoff history. Their last two playoff appearances went penalties against Sporting Kansas City, which they lost. But I think that that adds to it. And so if you get that playoff, you know, kind of showdown between these two teams, that would lead to more people acknowledging the rivalry, because it does feel like there is a lot of physical play, a lot of chippiness, a lot of spark out there on the pitch. And I look forward to these games because I do feel like there is a good, there is a something building between the two sides.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, oh, go ahead.
You.
I was just going to say, I think Julio Cascante and Brad Stuber are our gentlest players, like just across the board. They are two of our most wholesome boys, right? And to watch Julio roll someone off the pitch and to watch Brad get in someone's face, like there was a level. And I think that was one of the first matches, if not the first, that we played San Jose. And so right off the bat, every time we get to see this matchup, especially at home for us, we're like ready for it. We're inviting all of our, you have to come to the San Jose match because you got to see this.
Yeah, we expect Alex Ring to get in somebody's face, right? To celebrate a tackle that probably should have been a yellow card.
I'm a little bummed that Preston Judd is out because watching him and watching the way he enjoys
being a bad guy.
Yeah.
I love, dude, the instigator. It's something that I love about sports.
Yeah, you're a hockey guy.
You got it. You got it. Yeah, exactly. But like, even like, I always talk about like in any sports, like you want to have somebody who can get under the other team's skin. Mm-hmm. And like Preston Judd's red card with the elbow, like before VAR. And I'm not trying to just be an apologist for my team because I don't like this to be taken out of soccer in general. But like before VAR, that doesn't get reviewed. It's a nine saying, "Get off of me! You're draped all over me." You've got to be smarter in the modern era because they can go back and review that. And so he's learned that lesson, hopefully. But yeah, like you love, you know, the instigator is something that I think is such a necessary component of sports. You need to have somebody that's going to be able to rile up your team. And I go back to former
Felipe, the best ever. Like,
yeah. Well, it's how it goes. I mean, that's you need somebody who can get in people's faces. There's a great story that, from the Sharks, who I work for in hockey. Owen Nolan used to play for the Sharks, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know, big dude. And Jamie Baker, who played with him at the same time, would say, "What would you guys do if you needed to get into a game?" You'd say, "Oh, you would hope the other team would piss him off, because then that would change the entire dynamic." It's like, you need those guys who can be that kind of emotional lightning rod. And sometimes it takes a guy who can get into somebody else's face and make something happen. Like, that's just, that's what you love, the instigator, because otherwise, like, listen, good sportsmanship, I'm all about, but you do need somebody to be that red A who can be sandpaper out there and kind of shake things up, makes the game more fun.
You're going to love Diego Rubio this weekend.
Yes.
You know, dude has a long history of being Diego Rubio, and coming to Austin has not changed that at all for him. And so, I think he might be on track to get a yellow and then miss our next match.
Yeah, because he had a yellow last weekend. So.
Yeah, yeah. He's averaging about one per match. And so he is not a man who will lose some due to good behavior. So, you know, chances are, if this rivalry is what it is to us, to the players, we're going to see one for him, and we'll have to find somebody else to play up front next match.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's how it goes. I mean, I believe in the power of yellows. And actually, we kind of talked about that after the Quakes loss to the LA Galaxy, where Ricky Pooch was just kind of allowed to run free in the midfield. It was like, guys, like, if that's happening, maybe in the next game, like, give him a hip check early. Maybe somebody takes a yellow to just say, "Hey, we're not going to let you do this again." Like, that's, like that mentality has to exist. And it's a little bit more damaging, you know, than in other sports where, you know, like in the NFL, you know, you'll get a flag. It's not the same. You don't get one more flag and you're ejected. You know, it's like, no, you got to make sure if you're going to do that. But it's like, put a hard foul on a guy. Just let him know, like, no, you can't do this. And it makes things more spicy.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a very San Jose mentality too. So like, I'm really glad to see that aspect of like what we've taken from San Jose is reflected in the local vibe as well. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's the blue collar mentality. Just, if you're gonna play against us, it's, you're gonna hurt when you're done if you want to try and win. And I don't mean they're trying to go out there and hurt anybody, don't get me wrong, but it's like, yeah, it's gonna be a tough physical matchup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ted, thank you so much for taking the time to have this chat with us. I am really excited for this weekend. Like I said, it's one of my favorites of the season always. So thank you for giving us a little bit more insight and a little bit of your San Jose perspective. Where can people find and follow and listen to all the great things that you're doing?
You can find me on Twitter at Ted Ramey Media and on Instagram, just Ted Ramey. Just look for the guy doing that. That's my profile pic. Bald guy with a mic and a red beard. And then you can listen to the Soccer Hour on 810 The Spread, which comes out weekly. It's a San Jose Earthquakes focused podcast, but we also discuss various other issues around the league and the United States men's and women's national teams. And then, you know, you can also, if you're a hockey fan, I work for the Sharks as well, and you can search Morning Tide is the flagship podcast I do for them, so you can check it out. But yeah, I would just say follow me on social and you'll probably get a taste of everything. And that might be as much Ted as you can handle in your life. But thank you so much for having me on, guys. This has been awesome. Don't hesitate to reach out to me whenever y'all need. And I see, by the way, I feel like you're going to think that I am mocking you because I am a proponent of the word y'all. I've been using it since I have been like 16 years old because I just think it makes sense as a language construct. And I've heard both you guys say it. I'm like, I hope they don't think I'm mocking them because it is a word that I use.
I honestly didn't even pick up on it. It's so like natural in my language now that.
Yeah. Both of us originally from Massachusetts adopted y'all as a like.
Pretty fast down here.
Yeah. Like,
I don't understand why it's seen as like a Southern or Texas expression. It works. It's so everywhere. Well within the English language.
It's perfect. Yeah. And like we say down here, y'all means all, right? And that's why we use it, is to be as inclusive as possible for everyone that might be listening, right?
Love it.
Ted, thank you so much. This was awesome. Austin listeners, I highly recommend you check out this week's preview. We will link it in the show notes that Ted did for even more in-depth coverage. He had on Warren Barton from the MLS like media, basically will be Mark Followill's like co-announcer on this weekend's call. So if you need more of that local versus national perspective, I think Ted's preview is fantastic. Also, you get to hear our radio coverage, Lincoln Rose, doing Lincoln Rose things. we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time.
Anytime, guys.